stage. We're very happy to be back with an in-person event for the first time in 2 years. And to kick it off today with this session from Mayfield, evolving from scientist to founder. And taking part in this session, we have Janice Chen from Mammoth Biosciences, Diego Ray from Endpoint Health, and from Mayfield, Urshit Parikh. Now, before we get going, I'd just like to let you know that you can ask questions and we'll be doing a bit of Q&A at the end of the session. If you can send your questions into Slido, use that QR code, then we'll put them to the panel later on. Okay, thank you very much. Urshit?
Good morning, everyone. Welcome. Thanks for being here. It's great to be back in person. I think last year this was happening all on Zoom, and at least I became a Zoom zombie after a couple of years of that. I also hear that there's actually now a big line because of the vaccine checks. So we'll probably have people kind of flowing in, and we might end up having to kind of do a recap or two. But appreciate you guys being here bright and early. It's bright and early for us as well. What I thought would be good to do in this session is to sort of talk to two of my favorite entrepreneurs about their journeys, their lessons. I'm really inspired by what they have done and what they are going to do. These are going to be sort of life transforming companies. And so without further ado, let's get going. There's Slido, but if you have questions and you want to raise your hand, we can kind of find a way to accommodate those as well. And so with this, Janice, could you share what's your mission?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much, Urshit, for having me here and for the organizers for making this possible. It's great to see you all here on a Thursday morning. So my name is Janice. I'm the co-founder and chief technology officer at Mammoth Biosciences. We are a biotech company based here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and we're developing the Nobel Prize winning CRISPR technology to reshape disease detection and treatment. So our mission really is to improve lives by reading and writing the code of life with this really transformative technology that's really already, changing the way that we do research and ultimately the way we treat patients and actually, do medicine. So, we think a lot at Mammoth about not just, one enzyme, one disease, one indication, but we really think broadly about how we can apply this technology as a platform. Our bread and butter at Mammoth is discovering and developing these novel CRISPR proteins that we can then use to develop next generation diagnostics and therapeutics and ultimately really enable the continuum of healthcare. So not just thinking about treatment, but also detection and making sure we value all of that equally as patients move through, their healthcare journey.
Yeah. I mean, for us, it's been a privilege to have worked with Janice and team since inception. The way I kind of like to describe it to a more tech audience is that before Mammoth, if somebody had to develop with CRISPR, it was like building an application for a mainframe. You'd end up having to build your sort of chips and your servers and your operating system. And with Mammoth, it's like you have an Intel or Microsoft of bioengineering. They provide a platform, they build some of their own applications, but then the ecosystem kind of works with them. And the mission, I think, as Janice had kind of laid out, was to just save lives as quickly as possible, and no one company can kind of go do that. So great. And then Diego, what is your mission this time around? Diego is a serial entrepreneur, and in between before starting Endpoint was also the first bio partner at Y Combinator. And so I think he'll be able to chime in with questions as well for me and others. But go ahead, Diego.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Urshit. So thanks, everybody, for being here. So my name is Diego Ray, Chief Scientific Officer and co-founder at Endpoint Health. And at Endpoint, what we're doing is, where our mission is to dramatically improve outcomes in disease areas that have huge unmet need. And the way we're doing this is that we're starting a new biopharmaceutical company from scratch with a data-first approach as opposed to starting with a molecule first. And so Roche acquired my last company, GeneWeave. And while at Roche, co-founders and I came up with this thought of, what if we started a company like Roche today from scratch? What would we do differently? And the conclusion was that we'd start with data as opposed to starting with a molecule, given all the enabling technologies that are out there. So as a consequence, in taking this approach, we're revisiting diseases that either don't have good therapeutic options with very high mortality, things like sepsis and acute respiratory distress syndrome that's killed most of the COVID patients, unfortunately, and even before the pandemic was the highest mortality rates in hospitals. Also in chronic inflammatory diseases, rheumatology and gastroenterology, where existing therapeutics don't have the best response rates, aren't serving all of the patients. And by revisiting these diseases, taking the data-first approach, we can see subgroups of patients within those diseases that are biologically distinct and defined. And then we use that information to then figure out, well, what molecule would best serve that specific subgroup of a patient. So that's the approach we're taking at that point.
Yeah, I'm actually thrilled. And so, you know, one of the things that I, you know, what Endpoint's addressing is the diseases that kill more people than all cancers combined, and for which we don't have treatments that have been that have been developed for a couple of decades now. And what I'm super sort of amazed with is Endpoint will have gone from inception to getting the first products in phase two clinical trials within 4 years. And this kind of moves to what I really kind of want to kind of get right into the meat of it, right? Both of you ended up doing things that were not obvious from a business model perspective. It's hard enough doing a deep science company, but both of you had this strong sense of purpose and mission to sort of help patients as quickly as possible. And you ended up in the process doing things that were unconventional that you know, a lot of VCs and most of the industry didn't get. But now 3-4 years in, have turned out to be great decisions. So I'd love for both of you to share, you know, what is it that you did at inception that was just so against the grain, but is driving your success?
Sure, I can start. So, you know, Mammoth isn't the first CRISPR company, right? There have been a lot of successful CRISPR companies before us, but those really focused on, you know, one enzyme and really thinking about how, in particular, the Cas9 enzyme, and using that for gene editing medicines. And at Mammoth, we realized, in fact, you know, really understanding CRISPR and being part of that field for so long, that CRISPR is so much more than one enzyme. It's really a tremendous diversity of proteins that all have unique capabilities that can really transform all aspects of medicine, not just gene editing. So when we started the company, you know, we recognized already that there was, you know, this concept of discovery to application that we had really been unlocking in graduate school. And I think that the diagnostics application, for example, was, you know, a beautiful representation of what happens when you uncover an enzyme and really understand how it works and unlock a new application. So today, you know, people talk about CRISPR diagnostics as a very common term, but actually, you know, 3-4 years ago, no one knew what it was. It essentially didn't really exist as a term, but we've been sort of leading the charge and pioneering that field. But again, that's just one particular example. Now, you know, as we continue to mine these, you know, this entire universe of CRISPR, we've identified enzymes that, again, with new capabilities that are really leapfrogging the existing, you know, Cas enzymes to really think about how we can use it for permanent genetic cures. So, again, being able to go from this treasure trove and this evergreen pipeline of new systems to unlock new applications and unlock, you know, a lot of just opportunities for improving patient care has been something that a lot of the traditional CRISPR companies, you know, didn't really have the opportunity to do because they were really just kind of focused on one protein system. So I think that kind of initial goal for Mammoth and that opportunity and that capability that we have at the company was something that we knew was something very valuable, not just for Mammoth, but really the ecosystem at large. And, you know, Rashid talked about this model of Intel Inside. I mean, we truly want to be like driving the ecosystem for CRISPR. It's going to change the way we do medicine in this century and beyond. And, you know, for Mammoth to be leading that effort is something that is a huge, you know, responsibility and opportunity for us.
Yeah. I think, Janice, you know, there's just so much that kind of got said in what you just said. And if I had to sort of pick a few of my favorite points on that, right? One was this point of, you know, unlike a lot of inventors who think of their invention as my precious and they just try and keep it to themselves. This whole point about, and that's very common in life sciences, right? This whole point about we're going to go do it for an ecosystem, then not just do one thing, do a broad platform, but, you know, but still do one thing well at a time. And then sort of not be shy to let the obvious answers kind of lead you to sometimes what look like non-obvious conclusions or sort of obvious questions lead to non-obvious kind of conclusions, which is, right, like you can do diagnostics and therapeutics in one company. and they don't have to be separate companies. And so, those have been, and I think the big takeaway that for me has always been that, first principles analysis and approach. So both trying your sense of purpose and mission to sort of a first principles approach then does lead to sort of a path. And then how you sort of go ahead and focus to kind of, you can do 10 things one at a time, right? And so, how do you still make progress up on that? And that's been great. Diego.
Yeah, sure. So I guess maybe one of the things you highlighted is, how we're doing something different or in a different way that maybe some of the challenges that came about because of taking that approach from an investor point of view and so on. And I guess a key one for us was that by taking this precision first approach, as we call it. So we don't start with a molecule, we start with the data and then let that guide us to what molecule. That means we don't have a molecule, right? And so early on for a lot of investors, especially biotech investors, that was the key question is like, well, where's your molecule, right? And so that did introduce a big challenge for us in getting started in really, so what are, if you don't have a molecule, then what are you, right? Are you a data company? Are you a diagnostics company? And so that was something that that we had to navigate carefully. Fast forward and we get to the point where we actually identify the right molecule, bring it in, all that kind of it makes sense in retrospect from the outside point of view. But getting started, it was a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, no, that's well said. Taking this to sort of more personal kind of journey point, right? In the end, it doesn't matter how great the science is, people build companies and people buy products, right? And so at a personal level, what have been the key sort of pivot points in your journey to where you're now? Janice?
Yeah, so, Mammoth is my first company, and it's the first company of all the co-founders, Trevor Martin and Lucas Harrington. Jennifer has had multiple companies, but the three of us are leading it. So that's, I think, a tremendous opportunity and very exciting for us because we can really think about how we want to build the company from first principles, but also, take risks, think outside the box. We're not kind of tied to the way things used to be done. We can really think, in a unique way and kind of build off of each other's capabilities to really challenge each other and rethink how we want to build the next great biotech company. Obviously the first kind of big step was from us going, moving to, from a PhD, being PhD students, graduating from Berkeley and Stanford already. It was a unique and rare union of Berkeley and Stanford students to then actually starting Mammoth. That has been, a very exciting time for all of us. I think none of us could even, at the time, imagine what Mammoth could be. But obviously, as we slowly kind of grew the company, partnered with world-class investors, partnered with really just talented employees and other advisors, it's been, really our lifeblood project to take things from, again, being inventors on the core technology to really enabling kind of a new category of CRISPR. It's been 4 years and there's been tremendous inflection points for the company as we, again, started with our core discovery platform, really proven out the diagnostics application, closed key contracts with government agencies and industry groups to accelerate the development of a first CRISPR-based COVID test, and then, closing partnerships with major biopharma to really accelerate the development of CRISPR in the clinic, and then now, continuing to build world-class business. I mean, it's been a huge amount of teamwork and really just mission-driven individuals to pull together. Now we're about 150 employees, just closed our Series D about 6 months ago. So we're really in a high growth mode and continuing to think about how we can be that next generation CRISPR platform company.
Yeah, no, congratulations on the Series D, which was north of $1 billion, where the biotech market had been already in correction for a while. So that was great validation for all the work. Diego, what have been the key sort of turning points for you? And for you, I'd like to hear about those going back all the way from your grad school days when you started your first company in the depths of the last recession to
sure.
Sort of now.
Yeah, and maybe I'll take it even one step further further back. So I studied electrical engineering originally at UC Santa Barbara. That was my undergrad. So the first big jump was going from engineering into the life sciences. So after UCSB, I went to Cornell to do a PhD in biomedical engineering, then a minor in biophysics and applied engineering physics. And then while at Cornell, we started GeneWeave Biosciences. And so the other, thinking back, and I'll come to this in the next kind of steps, each step of the way was key learnings and key kind of training grounds, I would say. Mm-hmm. And so during the PhD, my fifth year, I left the PhD program to start GeneWeave. I came back later and finished the degree and got the degree afterwards. But we started GeneWeave in 2010. First check was 2010. We were trying to get off the ground 2007, 8, 9 before that.
Wow.
Different world back then in terms of how everything was going, markets were going. And so the next obvious kind of key training grounds was GeneWeave, the whole GeneWeave experience. So GeneWeave went from seed, Series A, Series B company in a five-year period, and then we were acquired by Roche in 2015. Then Roche was a phenomenal training ground as well. So they spent 2.5 years there before stepping off. And then between Roche and Endpoint, joined YC as their first life sciences visiting partner. And again, another phenomenal training grounds, because GeneWeave, we were a diagnostics company. We were developing tests for detecting and identifying bacteria and guiding antibiotic therapy in hospitalized patients. So focused completely on just that, building that product and building that company. And then fast forward to YC, and all of a sudden had the responsibility of being involved with and helping out all the life sciences companies, whether it came from therapeutics, diagnostics, tools, devices, health IT, et cetera. So actually learned a lot in the process. On to the new training grounds at Endpoint.
That's great. As you kind of go on this personal journey, right, one thing I've kind of come to admire you is how you have an amazing team of co-founders with you. So I'd love to hear kind of the story of how do you pick your co-founders? What's your advice and then how do you define the roles? It'd be great to kind of hear your perspective. It's hard to do a company, but it's even harder if you're the only founder. So
yeah. So like I said, there's four co-founders. So one of them is my former PI, Jennifer Doudna at Berkeley, and my other co-founder, Lucas Harrington, and I were grad students in Jennifer's lab at the same time. So we had started working in the lab and really, being at the forefront of the CRISPR field back in 2014. So this was actually just a couple years after, the seminal, Cas9 gene editing paper, and that's what received the Nobel Prize, a couple years ago or last year. And, that's really just been a huge catalyst for me personally, because I've been able to really just become a deep expert in, how we can, use CRISPR and understand the fundamental mechanisms for making them a very powerful tool in technology. Lucas and I, again, we had known each other through grad school, very close partners, great friends, critique each other all the time. We've become basically siblings over the last several years. And so it was very natural for us to, think to say, okay, well, this is all the opportunity here in the field. Like, how can we actually accelerate that even further and take that into a company? At the time, we didn't know Trevor Martin, who was our other co-founder and CEO of Mammoth. And actually it was, through Urshi and many others who actually introduced us, because, saw that Trevor and Lucas and Jennifer and I all had a similar vision to transform CRISPR into these, new applications. And so it was actually a series of like speed dating, quite literally, over a couple of weeks, when we said, let's just take the leap of faith. Let's kind of build something together. We're stronger as one than trying to be fragmented. So it was a huge risk, because, like I said, Lucas and I knew each other very well. We had only known Trevor for a couple of weeks and months, but we knew that this was going to be a partnership that we were willing to take the risk for, because it was such an important problem that we wanted to solve. And then, of course, with Jennifer's support, really thinking about, how we can bring great people together. That's really been, I think, the key to where we are today. Again, like Arshid said, I think, again, this is my first company, but it's hard to imagine doing it without co-founders. I mean, there's just been so many ups and downs throughout the journey, and to have people that you can commiserate with and inspire each other and push each other, I think that's also made a huge difference. And I think that as far as our roles, I mean, it was kind of natural for us to fall into our respective roles. So Trevor is our CEO. He's really been driving forward a lot of the business development and moving forward, kind of the new opportunities that we have with the technology. I'm the chief technology officer. I really, oversee kind of day-to-day developing the diagnostics business. And then Lucas is our chief scientific officer. And, you know, he's also really focused on the discovery applications as well as enabling new therapeutic applications with the technology. So that was very natural for us to fall into our roles. And we've been able to really support each other in that way. We have really clear swim lanes as well. That's super helpful with co-founders. Like, it's very easy to say, okay, you do that, you do that. You know, there's no like, you know, conflict around roles. I think that's super critical if you're thinking about finding the right co-founder relationship. But then we all come together to think about strategy for the company. It really is a team effort. It's not one person driving the strategy. It's the three of us. And of course, now with the extended team to really think about how we want to build this company. But like I said, I think finding the right co-founder relationship is really critical to the success in scaling the company.
Yeah, it feels, as I have seen kind of Mammoth develop over the years, right? Even your founder relationships, it's very much like, you know, the Golden State Warriors, where like everyone's a star and the team really works well together. And there's a lot of respect for each other and the culture and the process. And as you said, right, you have your two co-founders whom you had known for 5+ years, and then one that you kind of aligned with over a few weeks. But you know, as we talk and see all of that, and so this is also a testament to how, you know, it implicitly is the founder leadership skill in terms of how you develop trust and build relationships, and so that's all very well done. Diego?
Yeah, so actually Jason, Leo, and I are co-founders at Endpoint Health. We were co-founders at GeneWeave as well. So after Roche, we got the band back together, so to speak, and started another company. The way we met originally was, so Leo and I were lab mates at Cornell. Leo was studying microbiology, I was studying biomedical engineering, we're in the same lab. And we both had the same kind of fundamental interest, which was what happens between lab bench and a product in someone's hands? How does that happen where, you know, what you're working on can become useful to somebody in the form of a commercial product? And so we started hanging out at the business school. So we would go audit classes or just sit in the back. And we ended up taking a course. It was Entrepreneurship for Engineers and Scientists. It's one business class that we took for credit in grad school. And we had to make a business plan around a concept idea for a company for that. And that was actually that became the beginnings of GeneWeave. And in that process, we realized, you know, we're learning on the job, obviously, when it comes to the business and industry side. We didn't have any of that experience ourselves prior to that. We were students, you know, the entire history for both Leo and myself leading up to grad school. And so we ended up getting introduced. We went to business school professors and we said, hey, do you know any entrepreneurial business students that you might introduce us to that are crazy enough to want to join a couple guys, you know, coming up with neat ideas that might become a company one day? And so we ended up getting introduced to a few different folks. And the key first thing about picking the founder was that it was just an immediate chemistry when we met Jason. It almost was obvious. It was kind of like follow the low friction kind of path. That was more of a you know, it was early enough. We each don't know what we're actually going to do in the company yet. We're barely getting to know each other. And so it's more honestly a gut feel and kind of how you feel with that person. You work well together, you know, et cetera. And so that's how we got started and got together. And you start defining the roles, I think the key thing is that it takes a lot of self-awareness. It's a combination, I think, of what needs to be done, what are you good at, and what do you want to do, and kind of finding the balance between those three things. Where do you want to go? How do you want to build your career? And so we settled into our roles in that I'm the chief scientific officer, the chief technology officer at GeneWeave, same role though at Endpoint Health. Jason's our CEO and Leo's our chief operating officer. The other piece, I think as we started growing is that early on, you have you wear multiple hats, right? And so for example, Jason was our CEO, but really he was also our head of product, in defining what are we building. For me, it was CSO, head of research. Leo was, COO, and operations has a lot of subcomponents. And as the company grows, you know, we ended up bringing in folks that were more focused on product, and for myself also bringing in a head of research, and for Leo, ended up transitioning more to technical operations while we have other folks we brought on to handle administrative and people operations. And so I think as things evolve, it also depends, you know, it's the balance of those three key things and just doing what the company needs and what you're honestly, what you're good at and what you like doing.
Yeah, I think I couldn't emphasize more your point on the self-awareness. And then sort of finding the co-founders leap. I remember, my second company I had with a co-founder that was introduced to me by someone. And like, we have this first meeting, which goes on for hours. And it was pretty clear that it had to be, but it does require a certain kind of leap that does feel kind of right in the gut. Compared to the 2008, 2009 time frame, right? It's there's never been a better time to be an entrepreneur. And so while we may have some correction happening in the late stage markets or the public markets, the early stage, we have more money available to entrepreneurs and founders than ever before. So, what is your advice, Diego, on as you sort of make a company, especially if it is going to be a mission-oriented or a deep technology company, what should you look for in your early investors? Do you do a party round? Do you pick focused partnerships? And how do you pick your investors? And why do they matter? Or do they matter?
Sure. Yeah. And I guess if for at Endpoint, we were in a privileged position to actually have more of a pick of our investors. Because first time around, depending on what opportunities you have around the table, maybe less options. And so I think that's kind of the more recent events were really where we had that opportunity. And the full disclosure, Mayfield's our seed investor, lead investor. And the reason that we went with Mayfield was that we wanted to build a company that was going to be founder-led and it was going to be a long-standing company. We didn't want to flip it. We didn't want to sell it anytime soon. We didn't have an exit strategy, essentially. At the same time, there may be opportunities that help you fulfill the mission of the company that might turn into an exit for an investor, whether that's an acquisition or an IPO. But as founders, we wanted to be in it for the long haul. And so we were looking for investors who shared that belief and would back that. And it was clear when we met Urshit and the folks at Mayfield that that's what they wanted to do. So the way I looked at it was that Mayfield, way back in the day, invested in Genentech, Amgen, Intuitive Surgical, Millennium Pharmaceuticals, more recently in tech companies, and now the next Genentech is kind of the goal, I would say. And so or multiple of Genentechs, right? And so, we were lucky to find, Urshit who shared that belief. And it was clear that it was he was being sincere about it. He's held true to it, throughout. Mayfield's participated in every one of our financing since then, and has been a phenomenal supporter. So that was a key thing, the shared vision of where the company was going to go, thinking many, many steps ahead, I think was the key thing.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the same for us. So Mayfield led our Series A and, of course, been partners with Urshit since the early days. Like I said, he was actually part of helping cultivate, the founding team and getting Mammoth on the right track to where we are today. So it's been, a tremendous opportunity. And I think it's, a testament to Urshit's really commitment to founder-led companies. I think that's been a shift in the model, right? I think, especially in biotech, this old school way of, okay, let's really just put in, an experienced management team is that model is changing. And I think we're seeing that really pay off in a lot of ways. Like Diego said, we are thinking about the long game. We're not talking about building, company and then flipping it. We're really thinking, how do we be the next Genentech? Let's go far, right? It's a marathon. And I think finding investors who are really aligned with that and are in it for the long run is actually really, really key, right? Because you need to have the alignment and the values and the mission. So, we've been really fortunate too in this environment to be able to have the opportunity to be selective. That's obviously not the case for a lot of people and throughout different, times in the environment, but I think we're really been thinking about how do we find the highest quality investors to help continue to build Mammoth to where we want to be.
Cool. Well, I know we started late, but we do have a buffer to kind of go on a few minutes. If you have questions, you can put them on Slido or raise your hands, and we can kind of get to those anytime. Damien?
We have a bunch of questions, actually. They've been very active.
All right.
Sending them in. So. Let's start with what are the important contributions from Mayfield that you've had other than funding?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think it's hard to imagine Mammoth without Mayfield's involvement, honestly. I mean, like from the early days, just helping. I mean, they really understood what we were trying to do, right? Again, we're not trying to be traditional, you know, diagnostic company or a traditional therapeutics company. A lot of people didn't get that. They were like, wait, you're trying to do both? Like, what does this mean? And now you've got this discovery. And Mayfield just got it, right? And so I think being able to have a thought partner to say, okay, how do we continue to evolve this business, this strategy? And then, of course, kind of build in, you know, other kind of world-class team members and advisors, I think, has been critical. You know, your early employees in the company are super important, as are your early investors, right? They really help set the stage, set the tone. And so I think having Mayfield part of that journey has been really critical to our success.
Yeah, exactly. Very much the same thing on our side. I guess the one thing I would add is really helping us to think big. Right. You know, Mayfield's built very large companies in the past. They've seen it before. And so having that kind of foresight in comparables is really helpful to see how those lessons learned might be applicable to what we're doing at these early stages if we want to get there. So that's been a big help as well.
Yeah, I'll kind of try and put a couple of specific points, right? So first is, you know, the belief is, you know, we live by a core set of beliefs you see on our website. One of them is that no success is accidental. And so if you have recipes and lessons, they can translate, but they have to be adapted. And that is where the second part comes in. So if I look at my job, it's more like that of a coach. So, you know, entrepreneurs are athletes and elite athletes. And when an elite athlete is able to kind of connect with the right elite coach, then you can go win on the championship. So there's a lot of deep trust that goes into forming and the coach's job is to sort of adapt the style to the entrepreneurs, the situation, the game. And then it's not just any one. Yes, there's things like you can make introductions and hires and process, but it's like the ongoing thing. And I think for us, this people first kind of mindset does come with a position of sort of deep caring and love out on that.
Okay, I've got another one. What was your journey in finding product market fit coming from academia and into a market with pre-existing competitors? What signals do you look for and where did you find those signals?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, our first focus of the company in terms of applications was diagnostics. And of course, you know, very well understood problems with where diagnostic, you know, testing has its gaps, and that's been, you know, amplified throughout the pandemic. So, you know, when we first started and we saw, okay, this is a new way to do molecular detection with the new technology and one that has, you know, tons of longevity, right? Because you're able to kind of continue to evolve, you know, the core engine to achieve what you would like in terms of your optimal diagnostic, right? The right sensitivity, specificity, accuracy, low infrastructure, going into decentralized environments, all of these different elements were captured by what CRISPR had to offer. So for us, it was very clear that there was a really good fit with what the technology was today and then having a line of sight for what it can be in the future. So that, you know, that was on one specific application. And then, like I said, as we continued to, you know, push on our discovery pipeline and saw, okay, we've got these additional enzymes with capabilities that allow for really efficient delivery into tissues and organs to kind of change the way that other enzymes have not been able to do with respect to, you know, in vivo gene editing and precision medicine and you know, permanent cures. I mean, that was obviously a clear, you know, value unlocking and really enabling new ways of doing, you know, genetic medicine. So, you know, all of these, again, it's kind of interesting because we have like a, you know, we go from a discovery first approach to application, but it also goes the other way around where we say, okay, here's the unmet need in healthcare and how does that actually link up with what our technology can enable. So it's sort of a kind of a two-way street, but I think being able to have powerhouses on the technology side and discovery and development, but then also, you know, key people who are understanding, you know, what is the market need, what is the unmet medical need, and kind of bringing that together allows you to find a really great product market fit.
Sure. I get a quick lesson learned from the GeneWeave days where, you know, we got started and we were building a diagnostic as well. In this case, it was a one for MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, to look for drug-resistant bacteria. And we thought initially, well, you know, that what's being reimbursed in the clinic is detecting the gene that's responsible for the drug resistance. And so we started building a test that was gene-specific. And along the way, we realized that actually, you know, what clinicians really wanted to know was how do I treat this patient, regardless of how you got there. And so we found a much simpler way to get there with a phenotypic approach which actually looked at, well, is the bug susceptible or not to the drug, rather than looking for the actual gene. And that ended up opening up a whole world of other applications. And the key lesson there was not, you know, looking more towards the endpoint, which actually ended up being the lesson for starting Endpoint Health and why we named the company Endpoint Health, was that, yeah, look to, you know, what are you really trying to solve? Really try to define that first and then go back and figure out what's the right technical solution to get there rather than jumping into the technology first.
Yeah.
We got time for a quick one. What words of encouragement or advice would you give students wanting to leave academia for their next opportunity?
Do you guys want to go? I'll finish, yeah. Wrap up on that.
Sure. Yeah. Just do it. The earlier, the better. You know, there's phenomenal opportunities out there. You could always go back and finish the degree like I did, if it comes to that. I think that encourage more folks to do it. Think of it also, it's not just, you don't leave academia and stop learning. You're going to learn at the company as well, especially if you build it.
Yeah, I completely agree. Just take the risk. Take the leap of faith.
Yeah, this is for me a pretty near and dear topic. I've had various careers where I've kind of meandered out, and I've kind of come to one conviction that the only way to make impact at a global scale and change the lives of billions of people is by basically making companies happen, right? Entrepreneurship. So you may have the best science, the best research, the best ideas, but they don't translate into impact in government. They don't translate into impact, you know, in jobs, right? And so, you know, a great time to do a company is when in your gut you feel you just have to do it, because it probably will be the hardest thing that you do, but it'll probably be the most fun thing that you'll do. It's actually not necessarily the easiest or the fastest way to make lots of money. You know, it's definitely the best way to become a billionaire. But if you are kind of looking for the first 5, 10, 20, 50 million, you just have to find a rocket ship of a company and then get a seat on it. At that stage, don't worry about what seat on the rocket ship, right? Like, just get there. And whenever you are in a hyper-growth environment, you get to learn. But once you sort of get a sense that you want to kind of go do it, absolutely commit yourself. And then, you know, a company doesn't grow faster than its founders. And so as graduate students are in college, you get to learn. And your learning ability and your learning agility on all dimensions works really well to sort of help you kind of learn and grow. You know, the biggest societal problems are the biggest entrepreneurial opportunities. And I feel thrilled to be in a position to kind of have these conversations every day with so many of you. Champion folks like sort of, you know, the teams at Endpoint and Mammoth, and they're duking it out for who's going to be Amgen, who's going to be Genentech. But with that, thank you so much. Great to be back in living with COVID world. Thanks once again.
Thank you. What a great way to finish. Thanks for the insightful session. Thanks, Mayfield. Thanks, Janice. Thanks, Diego. Thanks, Ashit. I'm sure they'll be around and answer questions.